I want to go back to something that we started last week. The Mishnah had said that the person that reads the Haftorah, unlike the way we think of it, the Haftorah was considered something of like a low level, almost like the way the Mishnah makes sounds, almost like, you know, agreeing to do the Haftorah is almost like an insult. Yeah. So they pile on all of these other kibudim shemagiyalo if you do the Haftorah. One of those things is that he duchens if he's a kohen. So what's the obvious question? What is it? Right? The kohenim duchen. Whether you said haftorah or you don't say haftorah. So what could it possibly mean? That's one answer.
What was the Shom's answer?
When
the
Kohanim is,
when a Kohen is the Shliach Tzibur, and there are other Kohanim, so they go up to Duchen, but he does not do it. Different for Shacharit and Musaf. I think for Shacharit, don't go up to Musaf, we do,
I
don't know which one, but is that
any
other
news? The widespread practice today is that if a Kohen is Shliach Tzibur, he washes after, in other words, he washes before Chazaras Hashatz, and then he takes a shoe, and then he turns around in the middle, and he duchens in the middle, and the Gabbai calls out the prompts, Yivarecha, etc. That's a pretty widespread, here in Eretz Yisrael, that's a pretty wide, I don't think in America they ever do that. I mean, no, but on Yom, in other words, when they have duchen on Yom, I never saw it in America at least. But here it's fairly widespread. As a matter of fact, here we have one of the guys that's one of the regular at the 740 minyan, one of the regular Bali Tefillah these days. A guy's in Avelis as a kohen, and he duchens on a regular basis. But this is not in the poskim. This is not, even though it's the widespread. Excuse me. Even though it's the widespread practice today in Eretz Yisrael, I don't know, in every community and in every Eidah and in every Beis Medrash, but you know, in the places where we daven, it's pretty widespread. But this is not the unanimous opinion amongst the poskim, as we will see. So there's a few different answers. The Tosfos Yamtiv. Tosfos gives two answers. First, he says, Enachinami, the Mishnah does not really need to say that this Kohen who got the Haftorah also duchens, because Manavshach Kohanim duchen, but it's because later it will say that the Kohen is the. Later in the Mishnah it says that a katan should not duchen. So since it talked about duchening, it's keeping some kind of parallel. It's like a stylistic matter in the Mishnah. And then the Tosfos Yamtiv gives a different answer and says that maybe this coin, maybe he's not the Shliach Tzibur. Maybe for whatever reason he gets the Haftorah and somebody else is davening Musaf. Apologies to the people listening at home. But maybe he's the leader of the duchening. Now, you know, like, we also don't really have this so much. But you know, like in Chutz Laaretz, when duchening used to be like a special thing on the holidays?
It still is.
Well, not when you were a kid, you davened in a Sephardi shul in France?
When I was a kid, I went to shul like once a year.
Oh.
And probably one of the times they had the like somebody picks a tune, one guy picks one.
Yeah, so the guy who's like the chief coin who picks the tune with the niggin, you know, in your coin days
in America, that was because I'd come from being in Israel for a few years. I came back and they're all talking about, they're all getting excited and talking about the tunes, and I'm like, you know, it's difficult. The tunes are, you know, if you're with a tali, especially with a heavy tali, it's hard to keep your hands up when you're doing these long tunes.
Oh, I see.
And
you have to do those arm exercises.
Yeah, so like you're standing like this, and you know, they're singing, and they're getting really into it, and you're in like. So.
Yeah, my kid just asked me, he pointed out that not all of the Kohanim Duchen in the same way.
He's peeking.
What?
He's peeking.
He's peeking.
If a kid notices that they're all duchen in the same way, then...
No, in other words, in terms of the placement of the hands, the Kohanim do not all duchen the same. Some Kohanim go like this, and some Kohanim go like this, and some Kohanim go like this, etc. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that the Kohanim themselves are probably not aware of this, because the Kohanim themselves never... They never have a mirror back onto themselves. They never see how the other Kohanim duchen. And in fact, not all of the Kohanim duchen properly. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah say that the Kohanim should not raise their hands up there. Only the Kohen Gadol, when he duchens, would raise his hands up to his forehead. And that Kohanim Hedyot should duchen with their hands at shoulder height. And that they should be, you know, together like this, not out like this, and not Mr. Spock, right? And also like the way that they wear the talisim. So some people, so like the talis is supposed to go, the talis is supposed to cover the hands. And according to our practice today, in the Beis HaMikdash, when they duchen, they didn't have this covering up of the talisim. But the talis would cover their hands, but the talis should kind of come down so that they don't see their hands either. Based upon this idea that
the... Just like close my eyes.
Okay.
How does the talis cover their hands?
Here, you would... In other words, they would wear the talis. In other words, this is what the Mishnah Berurah says. You should... In other words, you see, the hands are covered, but also I, since this is covered here, I can't see, I, the Kohen, can't, I'm just, you understand, I just play a Kohen on TV. I can't see my own hands, right, because they're covered by the talus in front of my face. But the Kohanim themselves don't really see that they're not all doing it exactly the same, in the same manner, which is why the Kohanim should, like, have the occasional refresher course. If you look at Corey Beinhacker, he knows what he's doing. That he gets it right. No, that's the point. We can, because they cover with the talesim.
We still don't look. I mean, you know. That's...
Yeah, you're not supposed to stare. That's the next Mishnah. Anyway, so that's the Torei Evan rejects this idea, and says there's no such idea as like the lead Kohen. This is a made-up idea. Nowhere in the Talmud does it mention this idea that there's one Kohen who's the leader of the other Kohen. Adarabba. Maybe there's... This is not what the Torah even says, but Adarabba, maybe like that, this whole idea that like there's one Alta Kohen who like leads the Duchening is against the whole idea that they're all doing it together. The Gabbai or the Chazan calls out the prompts, but they're all meant to be Duchening in sync. And the idea that one person would lead them, there's no basis for this minhag. It's not wrong, but the idea that that's somehow a kavod that's compensatory for the insult of taking the haftorah has no basis. So the Torah Evan says, that the Gemara in Sota has a case of what do you do if you have a minyan that's only kohanim. So you can't have all the Kohanim go up to Duchen because there won't be... In order for the Kohanim to bless, you need to have something to bless on. You have to have the people in the audience to receive the blessing. So how do you do it? So 10 people should remain behind. 10 Kohanim don't get to Duchen. So, and maybe if there's 5 Yisraelim and 10 Kohanim. So 5 Kohanim should go up, 5 Kohanim and 5 Yisraelim should remain behind, so there's a tzibur to receive the blessing. I know you're thinking of all the mathematical possibilities.
No, I'm thinking of my brother-in-law's bar mitzvah. Yeah. At that time I was going, Toby's family was going. I think we had like one non-Kohen. It was like they came from America, they had the Kotel. They were like one group of, there were people in the Kotel, but our party I think had one non-Kohen.
Okay. So in this case, where some Kohanim have to forfeit duchening because of the mathematics of the minyan, but the guy that got the haftorah, he has first dibs on being one of the duchenim.
That scenario is an interesting thing where the Rosh, if I remember correctly, the Rosh says that if you have a minyan of only Kohanim, you should have a woman.
You should have a woman get an aliyah.
Yeah, because it was. if the whole thing is quoted Sibur, so you're by saying that one of the Kohanim is going to be like the Israel, the other one's going to be whatever, then you end up like you're being pogia with their kavod. So the issue of kavod Sibur, you're like,
right. Yes, that's correct. The Rashash, you know who the Rashash is?
Nope.
Rashash is Rav Shalom Sharabi. He was a Taimani, and he came to Eretz Yisrael. He was, I think he lived like in the 18th century. He was also a Mekubal, a Mekubal, as we say. And he also wrote a parish on the Mishnah. So he says the following. And this is relates to what you were saying, Shalom. The Mishnah in Brachos says that if a Kohen is the Shliach Tzibur, he should not do it. Because he'll get confused. Right, this idea of like turning around and saying the duchening in the middle of the Birkat Kohanim he should pass up on duchening on that occasion. Apparently, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was stringent in this matter. Someone told me that he thought that Kohanim should not serve as Shlichet Sibur when there's duchening. Even if you're an Avelis. You can daven, you know, Pesukah de Zimra, you can daven, you know, afterwards, etc. But he thought we should follow the din. I don't know if he imposed this in the yeshiva or not. But I'm told that he thought that Kohanim should not serve as Shlichet Tzibur. You know, because this happens to be the din in the Mishnah, even though it's not the widespread practice.
I think he said they shouldn't.
No,
the Mishnah.
Oh, in the Mishnah it says that they shouldn't do if a coin is Shlichet Tzibur.
Is there some mention of the distinction between Shachar and Musar?
I'm not aware, but it could be. You said this.
Yeah, I think it's mentioned in the back of the new Koran Siddur. They have a pretty extensive
dinim,
and I think it's mentioned there. And I've noticed as washing hands, I have seen that.
Musaf is more.
I don't remember which one. But I definitely noticed this distinction. I'm not sure everyone is in time to talk about it, but I've definitely seen that some Shlichet Tzibur do and some don't.
In Chutz Laaretz, when they do, they only do it in Musaf. That's interesting. Why only in Musaf?
Also in the Kibbutzim.
Oh yeah. Meaning, but during the weekday they.
No, they don't.
They don't during the week.
Only with Musaf. Only with Shabbat.
When Yavne, they don't do it during the week. Really?
Yeah.
Why? What about in Sneilio? What about?
Yeah, I think the same way. I remember.
I did not know that. I don't think I've ever been to those places besides on a Shabbat.
But even then, Shachar, I don't think they did.
I don't remember. I mean, this all together, this the minag, the Ashkenazi minag, you know, that we don't duchen in Chutz Laaretz except on Yontif, is of interesting history, but is probably a mistake. And many of the poskim tried to fight it, but to no avail. Right? It's a very well entrenched minag, but it's
So essentially, what you just said, you've seen in Eretz Yisrael, follow the same idea as in Chol.
No, because that's in Shabbat.
So anyway, so the Mishnah in Bracha says that when the Shliach Tzibur is the only Kohen, he shouldn't duchen, because if he's the only Kohen, he'll get confused. But if he has reason to believe that he won't get confused, if he's very practiced, if he's very well rehearsed, so then.
It's only when he's the only coin?
That's the Mishnah says, yeah.
What's confusing?
The idea that like, you'll get, since it's not part of the regular Chazar Sashatz, you'll like get messed up, you won't go back to the regular place, you won't, that was the fear. There was some fear that, like, you know, if you can't pitch and catch, you know, in the same game. These are two different, the duchening and being Shlichet Tzibur, two different things. And if you try to play both positions, you're going to mess up when it's time to switch back to Chazaras HaShatz. But if he's sure that he won't become confused when he's done with the Birkat Kohanim, then he's able to do the duchening. So the poskim say that when other Kohanim are present, the Shliach Sibur should let them perform the duchening. In other words, when and as it seems the din in the Mishnah is like when there's only one Kohen, and if he's the Shliach Sibur, so then he shouldn't duchen. You should pass up on duchening. And if there are other, but if he can do it without being confused, so then we allow him, since he's the only Kohen. But if there are other Kohanim present, meaning if there's going to be Birkat Kohanim without him, so then he shouldn't do it.
Even if
he is. So the Rashash says, however, if that guy, the Shliach Tzibur, is a Kohen, and he had gotten Maftir, and there are other Kohanim, in a case where normally we would tell him, forgo Duchening, in this case, the part of the pitsui of the haftorah is that we sell him. All right, you can also duchen. Okay, go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah here, the Mishnah on Kof Dalet Amud Beis in the middle. Kohen sheish biyadav mumin lo yisad kapav. If the kohen has some kind of blemishes on his hands, he should not duchen. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Mish Hayu Yidav Tzvuot, Tzvuot Stis, Satis, Lo Yisat Kapav. Even if he doesn't have blemishes, even if he doesn't have, like, you know, some kind of. Even if it's, you know, a blemish is like some kind of like real skin disease, or he's missing a finger, who knows. But even if it's just that he's, let's say he works in a profession where his hands get dirty, or like he's a Kohen, just came back from, you know, Laila Lavan, and he's covered head to toe in paint, right? And his hands are colored. So even that is considered a mum for the purposes of duchening. Mipnei sheha'am mistaklin bo. Because this defect or this paint or this color on his hands will draw attention to his hands. So Rashi says, Kohen sheyesh b'adam mumin, lefi sha'am mistaklin bo, ve'amrinan b'mesechet chagiga, ha'mistakel b'kohanim b'shah shenosin et kapehen einav kehot, lefi sha'shchina shura al yedehen. So the Gemara in Chagiga says that when, if you look at the Kohanim, when they duchen, you go blind because the Shechina is there. So Tosfot there, no, that's what the Gemara. The Gemara
is like a paradox.
What's the paradox?
If you're not supposed to look, then you won't see that his hand have a mum. And if you see that his hand have a mum, it's too late because you're already blind.
No.
Before, you might still be.
In other words, if you know that this guy is has something unusual in his hands, it'll draw your attention.
Well,
right? Unless you're not supposed to. No, in other words,
he's standing at the coin, is standing next to you, and he has died here, and he goes off the doker. You know that he has done something to distract you from his dokening because you're not looking at his hand.
It doesn't say you're going to distract you from his dokening. It says that you'll go blind.
No, you'll go blind if you look at the coin.
No, in other words, it doesn't. When we say you can't look at the coin, it's not like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. Marion, close your eyes, right? It means like if you stare. Right, if you're staring at the Kohanim, so then that's when you go. It's not like you're not immediately zapped. So,
not going up there where the moon, where it's called dance, is because then when the girl sees your hands, there'll be something distracted.
That's how Rashi says you'll go blind, not distracted.
Just because he has colored hands?
No, because if somebody's up there and they have something really unusual, and the Kohanim go up there. The Kohanim go up there. Right? It doesn't mean that you can't look at them. Adarabba, this practice that some people have of turning around is mistaken. You can glance in passing. But if you're glancing in passing, you go onto the train. Right? So you go onto, it's not polite when you're on the train to like stare at people. Right?
It's like looking at an eclipse.
Right.
You can look for a split second.
Right. No, but you go on the train and I was on the light rail the other day. For the very first time,
I did it too.
It is an overrated experience. Well, it doesn't really go any place that I ever need to be.
Going Well, it's going
to
be.
But it happened that I was near the Shuk and I had to get down to near the Iriyah, and it goes from point A to point B, so I took the light rail. But you're on the light rail, so you're there with Hamon Beit Yisrael. And everybody's packed up together like Mamishitz Gewalt, like Karlbach used to say. Eden, they even smell holy. So you're there on the train. So you're not supposed to stare at people, right? I mean, now, like, you know, if you...
Unless you have Sinron Yerushalayim, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, okay, so if you're Meshugana, you can get away with anything. But it's not polite to stare at people, right? But you look in passing at people. So there's, I don't know, there's one person on the train who has something unusual about them. They're, like, super tall. They're, like, somebody's, like, you know, 7'3". Or you have somebody who was chmanis, some kind of like defect. So the very fact that there's something about them that makes it stand out. What's this?
To look at the person even longer. So what Rashi is saying is you shouldn't stare at the kohen in the cloud. You get colored and uncolored. You shouldn't stare at the kohen in the cloud because you go blind.
But if the kohen has something on their hands, it's going to draw attention. So. Correct.
Okay.
Because normally we can.
It's rubbernecking.
Yes. Okay. It's a rubbernecking hazard. Normally, regular hands we're not drawn. Doesn't draw our attention. But since if they're up there with purple hands, or if they're up there the six fingered man, right? So if you see the six fingered man up there duchening. What? Yes. See, my name is Inigo Montoya. You can my father prepared that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a mum that's posel him from Avodas Beis Hamikdash. But Nagid. So anyway, so there's something unusual about him. So that's going to draw your attention, and since the Shechina is there, you're going to get zapped. Okay, so that's what Rashi says.
Tosfos the talit.
No, so in the Beit Hamikdash. They didn't have the talit.
Well,
this is the machlokus between. You see, the Masoros Hashas mentions this, but Tosfos in Chagiga. You don't have it here in Rosh Hashanah in Megillah, but the Tosfos in Chagiga, where this whole idea, the Gemara in Chagiga says the Dorash Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nachmani mitorgamina deresh Lokish. Kol amistakel b'shloshad varim einav kehot. There are three things that cause you to lose your sight. You know what they are?
Is eclipse going on?
The eclipse is not one of them, right? You don't need a special teaching to teach you that. No, the Gemara doesn't need to say if you poke, stick a hot coal in your eye, you go blind. There's all types of things that can cause you to lose your sight, but there are three things that cause you to lose. That's looking, staring at eclipse is a physical result. The Gemara describes three metaphysical thing causes a blindness, right? And what are they? A rainbow, the Nasi, and the Kohanim.
Rainbow?
I've heard about not looking rainbow.
Bakeshet dichtiv, kimare hakeshet asher yeh ba'anan, biyom hageshem. Hu mare dmut kvod Hashem. That somehow looking at the rainbow is somehow a peek at HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Tet Zayin Omra. It's quoting a pasuk. Ki mare hakeshet asher Hashem asher yeh ba'anan. What? Tet Zayin Omer Aleph. Chagiga.
I always said the rainbow was interesting because you shouldn't be like reminding of the
right. So that's a different idea that you shouldn't like if you see a rainbow. That's why we have the bracha on the rainbow, right? The bracha on the rainbow. The rainbow, as beautiful as it is not necessarily a good siman, right?
Has to bring the rainbow because we're really bad.
Right, so the rainbow, like in Chazal, the idea is that the appearance of the rainbow is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminding himself that, oh yeah, I promised them I wouldn't destroy them, but oh boy, do they magia lehem. Right? So, and there's also this idea that if you see, unlike the way we all actually do this, that if you see a rainbow, you should not draw other people's attention to it because it's a siman. It's not a siman klala, but it's a bad siman. But you see the rainbow, for immediately you put it up there, right? It's a rainbow for your merpeset. The first thing your wife's going to put it on the Facebook. So if your wife doesn't get to it first, so
She doesn't have Twitter, luckily.
There'd be a rainbow here, and, you know, wife would say, there's a rainbow over Elazar. Just another example of the Toshvei Hazayit being prejudiced against. the next of the Nasi. No, so that's your. It's a machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos, as I'm about to get to. But you're not reading the Gemara, you're reading the commentary there. The Nasi, why can't you look at a Nasi?
I think it's also some sort of Shkinashi.
You ever see Trump? Mamish, you can go blind.
You almost go blind looking at the eclipse.
So the Nasi, Dichtiv Natata Mehodcha Alav, that the Nasi bears some of the glory of God. So looking at the Nasi, you see the reflection of the glory of God.
The Nasi Hashvatim. Hashvatim? Now we're talking about the Nasi in the time of the Mishnah.
No. Well, that.
I mean, it seems like a very old, you know.
The pasuk that they bring is talking about the Nasiim, you know, of biblical fame. Maybe Chazal extended that to other people that bore that title, even though they did not have that.
That title lasted for like one generation.
Right, so if you look at the Kohanim who were duchin in Beit HaMikdash with Shem Hashem, when they said Yivarecha, Yivarecha, Yud Hei Vav Hei, they said it Kemoshe Tzarich in Beit HaMikdash. So our Kohanim do not have the Shechina. Even though the Kaf HaChaim says that even our Kohanim outside of Beit HaMikdash, Bizman Hazeh, without Shema Mefurash, there's still a shtickle of the Shechina there. He didn't, the Kaf HaChaim did not say shtickle. You understand, he was not Ashkenazi. He didn't speak Yiddish. But there's like a little bit of the Shechina on the Kohanim today, so therefore you should be careful not to look still. But other poskim, you know, are not concerned with this. And certainly today, when the Kohanim cover their hands, it's less. Although every now and then you see a Kohen whose hands stick out. If you're looking. So Rashi says what Rashi says, that you go blind because of the Shechina. She Shechina shura al kishrei etzboteim.
Wait, if we're talking about during the time of Beit HaMikdash, then if a Kohen had a mum, wouldn't he be automatically disqualified?
No, so in other words, there are mumin that disqualify a Kohen from all of Avodas Beis HaMikdash. But if you have paint on your hand, that's not paint. Right.
But the first.
Yeah, so no, so it could be that there's.
Shechina shura al kishrei etzboteim.
Right, so the Gemara is going to explain which kind of mumin. So apparently, these are mumin that don't disqualify him from Avodas Beit HaMikdash, but would disqualify him from Duchening. But Tosfos here says, "B'Kohanim b'zman shebeit hamikdash kayam mikan kashe al perish Rashi." But Rashi says in our Gemara, he quotes our Gemara, "Al hahiditznan yadav bo hakaniyot lo yisekapav." If his hands have like white spots on them, which would not invalidate you from avodas beis hamikdash. Right, but you have like some kind of skin disorder where you have like pigmentation problems.
Psoriasis.
Psoriasis is a scaly skin, but you have like spots on your skin where you have you have some kind of like skin. The coloration is off. Mishum she'am mistaklin. In the Gemara here, Amistake b'Kohanim b'shash shenosim kapeim enav kehot. V'ha leita demaskinan dafke b'zman shebeit ha-mikdash kayam. V'ilu hatam b'gvulin. In other words, our Gemara talks about Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara in Chagiga talks explicitly about Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara in Megillah does not talk explicitly about Beit HaMikdash. Right? So Mela, so Tosfos says Mela. And as the Tosfos in Chagiga is really attacking the Tosfos, the Rashi in Megillah, why this Tosfos doesn't appear in Megillah is interesting, but not relevant. In other words, if it was really only a matter of Beit HaMikdash, so we'd say, okay, Rashi, it has to do with this idea of going blind. But why can't you look outside the Beit HaMikdash? So Tosfos says it's not because of the idea of going blind. It's because of being distracted. Right? During the bracha, you should be concentrating on the bracha that you're receiving. And if instead you're staring at, you know, you get on the train and you see, I don't know, Wilt Chamberlain, and all you're doing is like staring at this guy who's, you know, really unusual, physically tall, so you're going to miss your stop. Right? So instead of concentrating on the bracha, you're going to be looking at these weird looking hands.
No one discusses the concept of like looking a gift horse in the mouth or something like that. I thought I remember hearing something. It wasn't appropriate when you're receiving this to be like, you know.
Well, maybe that's what Tosfos was to say. Maybe that's why it's a problem to be distracted. Anyways, that's the machlokas between Rashi and the Tosafos.
So in the notes here, it says here that I think according to actually the Kaf HaChaim that
or that's what I just said.
No, it's like you know, a different quote in the Kaf HaChaim that the Rama or the Kaf HaChaim saying basically today because we have the Talitot, then there's no issues of Mumin.
There's no issue, right?
Or
right. Right. So the Gemara here says, Tana Mumin Sha'amru Bifanav. Bifanav Yada Viraglav. That any Kohen, a Kohen who has. The Mishnah talks about the hands, but the. The Gemara mentions this idea of his face, his hands, or his feet. So Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Yadav Bohakaniyot. Lo yiset kapav. If his hands have these kinds of white splotches on them, he shouldn't do it. Tanina mihochi yadav bo akaniot. Lo yiset kapav. Right. So there's a brisa which supports this and says if his hands have these white splotches, he shouldn't do it. Akumot, akushot. Lo yiset kapav. If his hands have like a weird shape to them, they're bent, you know, so that the hands. The fingers curve up this way or curve down this way. Like as normally you put out your hands, they're straight. But if your fingers have like a weird bent to them, so that would also be a mum. Omer Rabbi Asi, Chifani Uveshani, someone from Haifa or someone from Beit Shan, Lo Yiset Kapav. Why? Chetvayin. Tanya Nami Hochi.
They don't pronounce the word properly.
Right? They have a different.
There's a lot of. It's like this you know, thing that we talk about.
It was the chet.
No, they just say, like, we don't have, you know, it shouldn't be chazanim because you can't
right? Because in Haifa and Beit Shan, their pronunciation of Hebrew was non standard. And therefore, they shouldn't duchin because they won't pronounce the words properly. So Tani Nami Hachi, Ein Morid in Lifnei Teva, Lo Anshe Beit Shan, Velo Anshe Beit Chefa, Velo Anshe Tivonin. These people should not serve as Shlichei Tzibur. Mipnei Shekorin La'alafin Ayanin. La'ayanin Alafin. They mix up the sound of the Aleph and the Ayin. Now we do not mix up between the sound of the Aleph and the Ayin. We pronounce it all the same. But as you know, the Ayin was once pronounced how? That's how you go from Aza to being Gaza.
Amora
to Gemara. Right? What else? What other examples?
Abu Ghosh. Abu Osh.
Oh, it was Abu Osh? So we don't pronounce the ayin the way it once was meant. We pronounce the ayin and the aleph basically the same. But these people, they switched the two. They did differentiate between the ayin and the aleph, but they just got it wrong. So I didn't, like, what would that mean? Like instead of saying the word aleph, they would say the word galef, and the word ayin, they would sound the way we sound it. So Omer le Rabbi Chia le Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi ilmolei atalevi pasul ata min haduchan mishum da ave kolech says, if you were a Levi, you wouldn't be able to go up to, not to the Duchen, to Duchen, but what does it mean to go up to the Duchen? To sing. The Kohanim would sing the Shir, but not every Levi. In the period when I was a Levi, I figured I would be schlepping the Kreshim around, because I don't have a good singing voice. So if you were a Levi, but you had a thick, a heavy voice, a thick voice, whatever this psul is, if you couldn't sing well, if you didn't have a pleasant voice, you couldn't do the avoda of Levim Lezimram.
Very nice of Rebbe Chiya.
What?
Very nice of Rebbe Chiya to point that out too.
Yeah. So Ata Omer Le Labua Omer Le Zil Eimale Kesha Ata Magia Etzel Vechikiti Lashem Lo Nimtzeta Mecharef Umagadev. So he answered back, he says, you, when you get up to the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Vechikiti Lashem Kiviti Lashem, I hoped for God, I anticipated God, I was. So he says, what are you going to say? You're going to end up, you're going to say that posuk, you're going to be a blasphemer. Why are you going to be a blasphemer? Because instead of saying v'chikiti Lashem, you're going to say v'chikiti Lashem. Instead of saying I waited for God, you're going to say I hit God, I beat God up, I smote him. Right? So, you know, careful who you're making fun of. Careful who you're criticizing, right? And as everybody has their own, you know,
like, the editor who put this in, are they like just having a good time? I mean, they could have, you know, it seems like a...
Samar of Huna, right? So the point is that, we're not makpid on these things. In other words, like, even if you want to be a karyan and call Yisrael, not anymore. Once upon a time, to be a karyan and call Yisrael, you had to like really pronounce. Like the other morning, I'm never up at that hour, but the other morning I had to drive Lonnie someplace early, so I was in the car at 5:59 in the morning, so you get to hear Kriya Shema. So that Kriya Shema, who is it that reads the Kriya Shema? That old recording? Was that Gil Chavav's father? No, but that recording has been around for 50 years. Shema Yisrael. Right? If I'm not mistaken, that voice of the Shema Yisrael and the Kol Yisrael is Gil Chavav's father was Ben Yehuda's grandson, and he was the son of Itamar Ben Avi. So what was his name?
Somehow they lost. They took the name Chavav, but there was no women in the line here that ended up having to switch.
Well, Gil Chavav is the his mother or the father?
I know his great grandson. I don't know the line.
No, but they were both Karyanim on Kol Yisrael. I'm pretty sure that it's Gil Chavav, so I might be mistaken. But once upon a time, to be a Karyan on Kol Yisrael, you had to be able to differentiate the between the Kamatz Katan and Kamatz Gadol and all of the, right? Nowadays, they can't speak at all. Like, it's terrible.
But once an old Israeli told me, "Ata Yerushalmi," it's like you're matam me'atayim, lo matayim.
So, but we're not mapping. As long as you get it right, according to
where you are.
I'm losing it. On Purim, when we lived in Yerushalayim, once I went to not Tishvil. No, who are those Hungarians in Emek Rephaim? You know, in Rehov Rachel or Rachel Imenu? Yeah, this great-great-grandson of Hasim Sofer. Erloy. There's, you know, this little enclave of Haredim right off of Emek Rephaim. So they're reading the Megillah. It's like you're in Pressburg, you know, in 1820. instead of Kimu Vakiblu, it's Kimi Vakibli. Right? So like I was sure I was Yotzei the Megillah, because every who is a he and every he is a who, except, you know, in the Megillah they're all the Kriyuch Tivs on the who's the he's.
I had a family friend in Yeshiva who said that we, like our Tefillah when it says it because we said Yom Haras Olam, instead of Yom Haras Olam. Talking about the structure of the world. Right. Obviously, like you said, it depends on the context.
Right. So,
like
so contextually, say, you know. Contextually, we're okay. Contextually, you're okay. What's the problem for us? I mean, what's the problem for me is, you know, when I came on Aliyah, I still pronounced everything with the suf, right? Because I didn't grow up like in a day school in America where like the Zionist day schools in America, like you learn to pronounce everything with a taf, and the more traditional places, you know, you still pronounce with the suf. But I grew up in a shul where it was Ashkenazi, so they pronounced everything suf, and we weren't anti-Zionist, but that's the way it was. So in my own davening, everything I pronounced with a suf instead of a tuf. And like at a certain point, I realized I can't do that anymore. I mean, I couldn't say kiddush. I couldn't like have my Israeli kids around the table saying kiddush. Right?
Do you find anyone in the modern Orthodox world who's like, I know people come and they still do it, but whose kids continue to do it? I've not seen.
No,
which I find unusual, because usually if it is a minhag, you think there'd be somebody who would still be, you know.
By the Haredim.
No, the Haredim for sure, but they also themselves, I mean, that's an event by morning. It's strange that there's no,
like our children, there's no such thing as our children who pronounce it as
such. But you find, I mean, there's a number of people that say in this minhag here, in the morning, Shabbat morning,
yeah, but nobody, like that, yeah, because we came with it, you know, in our suitcases.
Right, but I'm wondering, it's unusual to me that nobody would, that, you know, you don't fight anyone whose kids.
Yeah, but you can't fight City Hall. Yeah. Kids go off to school, you can't.
Well, you could, but.
No, but that's not, no, because you could have, you have Haredim who speak Hebrew with a tough when they speak Hebrew all the time, and yet when they come and they switch.
Yeah, but it's different because they tell their kids that.
That's how the kids
are. And Tfilah to speak that way.
Right. But our kids, you send a kid to school, they're going to whack them. Right? Imagine a kid gets up to daven for the Amud in one of the schools. I don't know. Anyway, so Omar Rav Huna, Zavlagan lo yisat kapav. Rashi says a Zavlagan. Rashi says a Zavlagan. Ah, wait. So go back. So you see the Rashi mipnei shekorin la alafin ayinin vayinin alafin ve'im hayu osin birkat kohanim hayu omrim yo'er. Yair with an aleph means may God cause his countenance to shine upon you. But yair with an ayin means
to wake you up.
Or to spill out. Right? Like may he spill out his face of meaning like he'll be angry at you. V'lashon klalahu ki yesh panim sheyit parshamu lashon ka'as. Right? So to say that v'yair with an ayin, your er panav elecha, would mean he should be angry at you. Kimo ponai elchu. He brings other examples. Metargamim yatre. Okay. So zavlagan. Rashi says. Zavlagan einav zofot dima. Somebody with some kind of eye condition where their eye is always runny. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah says that a zavlagan is somebody who's who drools, who like you know is like his beard is full of like you know like I don't know some kind of problem with his mouth. So that is it. But either way, like some kind of yuckiness either from his eye or from his mouth. Lo yiset kapav. Vahahu dahava be shivivute drevhuna. Vahava paris yadeho. Oh, but there was one of these zavlaganim in Ravhuna's neighborhood. And he used to duchen. Ah, there's a halacha says this person with this defect, whatever it is, shouldn't duchen. But in Ravhuna's shul, in Ravhuna's neighborhood, such a guy used to duchen. Hahu dash beiro hava. No, but that guy, he was a regular. In other words, when shouldn't a person with one of these defects duchen? Well, it's unusual. Right? If this guy, you know, that walked out of Barnum and Bailey onto the train, you know, it used to be like if you were the bearded lady or the fat man or super tall or the midget or whatever it was, so you were the bearded lady, so people would pay a nickel to go see you in the circus tent. But if you lived, if that person like lived in your town, it wasn't unusual. Everybody was used to seeing that person. So this Zavlagan normally shouldn't duch it. But if he's a regular member of the shul, like Rav Huna, like you think it was a big...
But he said usually, hafuch, usually people daven in their own shul.
Right, so now if you're davening in a place where you're well known and everybody knows you and it's not, it's lost the novelty of staring at you, so then you can duchen.
But what's the question in the first place? Just because somebody somewhere did something, this is a question?
No, so somebody does something. Ba'ofenekroni, somebody whose appearance...
No, I understand that. I'm saying what's the question of the Gemara? He's saying, but we know somebody who didn't do according to this halacha. Like,
right. So why is this an exception to the rule?
No, why is it a question? If it was Rav Huna, I could say, no, Rav Huna should know better. But they're just saying somebody in his shul goes up. Like, why do we assume that?
So you could say he did Navera.
Yeah, or he doesn't hold.
It could be, but in other words, you could say that, like, if there was a guy in Rav Huna's shul, let's say he did it once. Mm-hmm. Since he used to go duchen every day. In Rav Huna's shul, so you think Rav Huna's going to let this go on? Right? No, it could be. Look, in other words, your anticipatory gesture is correct. One way to resolve this would be to say, Enochinami did Navera. Right? In which case, you'd have to say, so then why did Rav Huna let him do it? Like, let's write the parallel Gemara. Okay, in the parallel universe, the Gemara goes like this. A Zavlagan shouldn't duchen. But in Rav Huna's neighborhood, a Zavlagan did duchen.
It doesn't even say in Rav Huna's shul, right? Maybe he doesn't. Yeah, it's
okay.
Strange.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
they mentioned Rav Huna because obviously they didn't just say in some place. They said Rav Huna's area.
Right. So you could say in Achinami he did Navera. So then what's the next step in our imaginary Gemara?
What was Rav Huna's response?
Why did Rav Huna let this go on? So the response could have been Rav Huna was on vacation that day, or it only happened once, and Rav Huna told him he couldn't do it again, or whatever it was. And then if the Gemara says, no, he used to do it every day, so then we'd be stuck, because how can Rav Huna let this go on? But in fact, this parallel universe that we just painted does not exist. The case is that in principle, somebody shouldn't do that. So in principle, one of these types of people should not duchen, unless it's a scenario in which the community has become acculturated to his presence. Tanya Nami Hochi, Zavlagan, Lo Yiset, Kapav, Ve'imaya Dash Biro, Mutar. And there's an explicit brisa that says exactly that, right? That both an ekroni shouldn't do it unless he's a regular. So Amar B'Yochanan, Suma ba'achat me'inav lo yised kapav, v'ha hahu dehava b'shivivuta de Rabbi Yochanan dehava paris yadeha hayadash b'iro hava tanya nami ochi suma ba'achat me'inav lo yised kapav v'mayadash b'iro mutar. The same parallel exact case. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Misha Hayu Yadav Tzvuot Lo Yiset Kapav. That's the Mishnah. If his hands have this paint on them, Tanya Imrov Anshei Ha'ir Milachtan Bekach Mutar. If most of the people in town work in whatever field this is, where they're painters or they're dyers or they're whatever it is, if it's a kind of thing where everybody understands that that's what it is, so then it's mutar, because again it's not unusual. And you know that there were places in Europe where the synagogues were organized by profession, right? This was the shul of the Schneiders, the Chayatim. This was the shul of the Sandlarim. This was the shul of the Tzovaim, the Shochtim, and whatever it was. So if there was a group of people that worked in dyeing cloth, so their hands would be constantly stained. Or even if you know any Sofrim, so Sofrim very often their hands are always splotched with the ink. Like you can never really get it out. Even Lani works in the bakery. Her hands always have. Like the dough, like just you have to like really scrub it off.
That's why she doesn't do it.
That's why she doesn't do it. Yeah.
But there's still something wrong. Something's not right, because if we say the reason why you can't duchen is because people are going to look at your hands and they're going to go blind.
Yeah.
So if you have strange hands and the people in your city recognize you, so like it's not a big deal. What if a visitor comes to your shul?
Yes, so I guess we have to be concerned with the rove. right? In other words, you have
also,
to...
I mean, even still, you could have, somebody could have some weird thing, they might find something... I mean, this whole thing is about the world. Somebody might be find unusual that somebody had something that, you know...
No, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that you say it goes according to the world, because Kielu, we're saying, at least according to Rashi, right, we're saying that, like, it's a sakana.
Right, but the sakana is only what people are generally look as, you know, what...
Mm. According to Rashi, it's a sakana.
I'm saying according to Rashi.
Even according to Rashi.
Yeah.
You could say that, you know, that those things most people would find, the example they gave, most people would find to be distracting. Or
I would say most people would know the halacha that you shouldn't look anyway.
No, but
no, but that's the point, that there's the halacha, but you don't want to put a stumbling block.
No, maskim, especially according to Rashi. So, like, to say that, but it's usual in my shul, but you always have guests coming to your shul, and it's going to be unusual for them. And if you're concerned about the sakana, it seems like, I don't know, maybe it's the question on Rashi.
Yeah. So, anyway, so here's some of the halachot from the Shulchan Aruch. Look at Simon Lamed Aleph, I guess. Im minhag ha-makom l'shalshel ha-kohanim talit al pneihem, afilu yesh b'fanav yadav kama mumin, yisad panav. This is Simin Kaf Chet, the Shulchan Aruch. Says, if the minog is that they cover themselves with the talis, so then none of this applies. Not the hands, not the face, not the feet if you wear socks. Does the Kohanim, of course, remove their shoes? But if the Kohanim are wearing socks, so then... If I give you a coin, you have to think differently about your socks.
That is definitely true.
I must confess, sometimes I'll put on a pair of socks in the morning and there's like a little hole, I figure, what's the difference? But if you're a coin, you have to be...
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
If you're Israeli, you don't wear socks.
And if you don't wear... So if the minag, and this is the universal minag today, that the Kohanim will cover themselves up with the talis. So the Ramah says, V'dafke im hayu yadav bifnim min hatalit. Aval im hei mibachutz lo ma'anei talit. But in other words, if the minog is to cover their hands with the and it's not just enough to cover their face with it, but if their hands are sticking out, right, so then the talis doesn't help. So it seems to me that the nearly universal minog today is that the Kohanim cover both their hands their face and their hands. But you see in the Ramah was aware that this was not the universal minog.
The large talit that we have now, that was standard, or did they ever have like the shawl like ones that we?
I don't know, but the.
I think those might be more difficult to really cover your face and hands.
Yeah, I don't think they have like those shawl like ones like you see like you know.
Also, back in the old country, the bima used to be like up on a stage, where like even if you covered yourself, you're like you're looking up
in
at the
some places, not always, not in every place. But. I don't think the talisim were probably not quite as big. You know, that's one of the explanations for why the minag Ashkenaz, although not the German minag, is you only start wearing a talis when you're married. What's the source for that? You only start wearing a talis when you're married?
Expensive.
No, but that's not the source. That's the reason.
The reason, right?
Yeah. So the limud, it has no basis in a makor, but the limud is the posuk says. Gedilim ta'ase lecha ki sof pasuk, make tzitzit for yourself. Ki yikach ish isha, right? So the smicha of tzitzit and marriage, ki yikach ish isha. Of course, it's talking about getting divorced, but that's a separate case.
Can't get divorced without a talit.
Right. That was the folk etymology, the folk origin for this idea that you don't wear a talis. Our minog that we don't wear a talis until after the Sfaradim, of course, wear from Bar Mitzvah or even earlier, and the Yekis, the German Jews. So one of the reasons has to do possibly with the cost of wool. Non-Shatnez wool in Poland, in Russia, in Lita was expensive. What did the Hasidim wear? What was the Hasidim's clothing made out of?
Gabardine.
Silk. Right?
So it was cheaper than wool?
Cheap silk was cheaper than non-Shatnez wool. So that may be one of the reasons for... What?
But the talit doesn't have to be wool.
But in the talisim, you know, always were wool. But this is one of the speculations for how the minag evolved. Wait, one more. Okay. Anyway, the Lamed Bet is the halakha we just learned. What? Oh, what's next week? Hanukkah is the first night?
And I guess the last night also.
Oh, so I don't know. We'll take a poll. It's two nights of Hanukkah on Tuesday?
I think if it's the first night, it'll be last night also, right?